This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Everywhere around the world, there are now more grandparents than grandchildren. If they are well and healthy, it's not a problem. But if they are sickly and dependent on others for daily living and finances, who takes care of them? We have consultant geriatrician Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin in the studio with us to look at whether we are prepared in terms of aged care facilities in Malaysia. You can call us if you have any questions or comments. Our lines are open at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Tan. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. You know, we hear so much being said about Malaysia being about to be an aging population, definitely it's just around the corner for us. Correct me if my numbers are wrong. Malaysia is set to be an aging nation by 2035.
Yes.
And that means that our over 65-year-olds will make up at least 15% of the population.
Yes, and recent statistics suggest that we might get there sooner.
Right. And so that begs the question, are we aging well or not?
Well, alarmingly not, because not only have we ignored the issue of aging, we've managed to actually accumulate these things called non-communicable diseases to actually potentially drag on, we call it the morbidity, extend the morbidity life years lift. So we'll have more years where we live with disability, needing care, needing health care as well as social care.
And, you know, is there a way to estimate how many years, and on average, how many years of a Malaysian's life lived in those, let's say, from the age of 65 until the average lifespan of 70 or 75, how many years of those will be lived in sickness?
We don't know the statistics yet, but hopefully we'll have them soon. So because you actually have to follow someone up over a period of time, and you have to follow a group of patients up over a period of time to really calculate what we call the number of years lived with disability. Increasingly, when we come to looking after older people, we come up with this concept of not just life expectancy, but also healthy life expectancy.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you've said that we are not prepared for this aging population. Yeah. We're not prepared for the fact that we have so many non-communicable diseases burdening us now.
Yes.
But what about, I mean, beyond the healthcare system, what about socially in terms of, you know, the community being able to support, in terms of employment? How well equipped are we?
Yeah, quite poorly at the moment. We are trying to work with lots of agencies to get people to change their minds about aging. But our main issue is that the older people who exist today always equate age with wisdom. And of course, they like that concept. You know, it's like I'm old already. I know everything. Whereas the younger people, there's generational gap. They know that they've learned all these demographic things in school, and they know that they won't be able to look after their own parents when they grow older. But then the society actually give them a lot of pressure. So there's a tremendous amount of guilt, inadequacy. Whereas the older people haven't, you know, we have a society that kind of don't embrace lifelong learning. So they didn't learn these facts because whatever, they stopped learning by the time they leave schools. So they just blame the younger population for not being prepared to look after them. So they'll be, you know, we always hear this saying, you know, one mother can look after 10 children, but 10 children can't look after one mother. Yeah. But the problem is literally that we haven't got 10 children anymore.
Yes. And even if we do, even among families that are still larger than average, the dynamics are changing, aren't they? So that traditional all children in the same country, for instance, many of them migrate now. Many families are split up, you know, from divorces and all that. What are the kinds of trends that you're seeing?
Not quite divorces, and we have apparently some strange, I'm not a I'm a geriatrician, I'm a medic, but apparently there's something strange is happening with divorces in Malaysia, that it's going down instead of going up. So it's quite pleasing. Yeah, but it's probably because of our cultural and religious beliefs. Mm. But the issue is urban migration as well as international migration. So a lot of older people are now in the kampung, are now actually on their own, even though they're actually below the radar, because when we go in and do, you know, because everyone's kind of registered in their own kampung house and they vote, go back to the villages to vote. We don't actually know how many of those people actually don't live in that house. Mm-hmm. So that they're not actually counted in the statistics. And then we also have international migration. Again, we don't keep numbers about how many of these people are actually overseas, because they're still registered in addresses in KL or PJ. So we actually don't really know the size of the problem. And because of this, our very judgmental society is very Asian. Most people won't own up the issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So parents won't say, "Oh, my children are all abroad. They still want to look after me. I'm struggling." Some of them won't say to their children that I'm struggling, because they don't want to trouble their children. And then and then the children who are actually there struggling cannot say they're struggling, because then they're unfilial. They're judged by society.
Yes. Yeah. And there's also just. Even when, then we bring it back to even when there are adult children around, and you think that physically, yes, they are in the country, or they're perhaps even staying in the same home, but many, let's say couples, for instance, both have to work these days in order to be able to support the family.
That's right.
And that adds pressure, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is a whole trap of modern living, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, we never have enough. We always spend more than we actually are able to bring in. So, you know, if as soon as we have a little bit more, we'll go out and buy the latest gadgets, a bit more. We aspire to put our children into private schools and also private universities, and everybody has to have tertiary education. All that is kind of that we call it trappings of modern living. Mm. And where the older person quite fits into this equation is difficult, because while they are still contributing to the family, that's okay. But once they start contributing towards the family, what actually happens? I have to say that it's very diverse. So, because we do have family members who give up a tremendous amount for their older people, but there are also parents older parents who do not want to see that their future generations are actually suffering because of them. Mm. So then they are actually voluntarily withdrawing and actually allowing the world to go round making the sacrifice.
But that's such a flawed view as well, that once you get to that age, it's seen to where you need to be dependent, where you need resources from others, whereas we do see in other more developed countries where the elderly are within themselves a resourceful and enterprising unit. How do we get there?
I know it's really strange, because I don't know how it started, because it's like aging isn't something that has been happening for many, many, many centuries. Mm. It's something that is really very new, this aging population concept. And prior to this, last century and this century, if you were not independent, you couldn't do things for yourself. That's it. You're not going to live. So how quite we actually evolved so fast to this society that just provides for the older person, that we have to actually do everything for them. The older person's not allowed to lift a finger in the house. And if they're trying to go, the children can actually forbid the older person from going out. How quite we evolved to this crazy situation.
Yes.
It's bizarre, but it is. We call it maladaptive. And it is probably because of a lot of pride. It'd be really interesting to study it properly. But, you know, what we see is a lot of pride. A lot of families think that, you know, I can look after my parents and therefore I'm a good child. Mm. So they would go through extremes to actually show this. Mm-hmm. And in to the detriment of the whole the older person, because now they can't actually do anything anymore. They've de-skilled.
Yes.
They've become disabled, even though they could have given a chance being able to continue to look after the finances, the garden, the house, but they've just become physically more and more disabled because of deconditioning.
Mm.
Yeah, how that actually happens is quite bizarre. Yeah.
And in light of, you know, the fact that we already have an increasing population of of older people who will need that care.
Mm.
And in light of the fact that most of their families are going to be struggling to provide that care.
Yes.
So let's come to the you know, what we're here to talk about, to be aged care.
Yes.
You know, why is that important, and what exactly do we define as aged care?
Yeah, we'd like to, at the moment, the trendy term for it is we call it a care continuum.
All right.
So it's not like one day you can't look after yourself, so tomorrow you have to check into a care home and you're going to die in that care home. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that. So aged care involves a care continuum, and it starts from the community care, where, you know, maybe you visit the GP once every year for your regular vaccination, which we don't, and right all the way up through to very high level kind of continuing extended care facilities, where they actually provide hospital level care mm-hmm. to someone who has that kind of needs.
Yeah.
So we call it a care continuum, and people should be able to move around the continuum, because, you know, as you get older, the susceptibility to illnesses is high.
Mm-hmm.
So when you fall ill, you might need care for a while temporarily. So you might end up going to hospital, or we might even have schemes where you don't need to go to hospital. Yeah. So someone can just come into your house to provide for you for a week or two, and mm-hmm. then after that, when you're better, they can go. They can stop coming.
Right.
Even if you end up in hospital, you need a bit longer to rehabilitation, you then check yourself into a step-down facility, you rehab for, unlimited amount of time, as long as you need. It can be 1 year, it can be 2 years, or it can be just 2 weeks. And then you go, and when you finally figure out how to manage at home, and this it doesn't mean that you have to be able to physically do everything for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We can also put in assistive technology, once we can figure all that out, you can go home again, and age in place, mm-hmm. so-called.
Okay, that all sounds very ideal. The perfect kind of the big picture of care that we need.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to go for a break now, but when we come back, I want to find out, where's Malaysia in providing that kind of continuum of care? We're talking about aged care facilities today with consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin. Remember, you can call us with your questions or comments at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. We're talking about aged care today with consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin. We have earlier already mentioned that Malaysia, and this is something we hear all the time, and also at the same time something we're not prepared to deal with, Malaysia will be an aging nation very soon, perhaps 2030, 2035, and we are just not equipped to deal with it in terms of the health challenges that the older people will be facing, in terms of the care that they need, in terms of what families can provide. And before the break, Dr. Tan, you talked about, instead of speaking specifically about aged care, you said it should be a care continuum, from community-based care right up to the point where they need extended hospital care,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds ideal. That sounds really amazing, like really what a population would need. But where is Malaysia in terms of being able to provide this?
Yeah, it's a challenge because prior to the economic slowdown, I know we've been having that for a few years,
mm-hmm.
but we used to rely entirely on our neighbours. And it's something that I always kind of makes my heart feel very heavy. It's like we are actually exploiting cheap labour from our kind of neighbouring countries, mm-hmm. in order to actually provide for our older people. But that's almost the same model that Hong Kong and Singapore actually subscribe to.
So where you're talking about basically getting domestic help.
Yes.
Just like domestic helpers are helping out at home with housework,
yes.
Adding on the care of an elderly person to
that's
that, right?
Yep. Yeah, in fact, if you've done it, recently, most of the time they're asking for a doctor's letter to say that the older person needs care. And therefore, then with that doctor's letter, then you can actually get a domestic helper. That is almost the modus operandi, and it's cheap, yes. I have to say. But it is not cost effective, because when you get a domestic worker in, they will do everything for the older person. So what we really, what has been a welcome change. So we've gone all ethical all of a sudden just because they don't want to come anymore. It's a thankless job. So nobody wants to do it. So we've had to develop a care industry over the last few years in order to actually overcome what we call the shortage of domestic workers. And so we now have people are willing to come from these foreign countries now. If they are trained caregivers, they'll be able to actually demand a higher a higher premium. And so they earn more money and they have a better quality of life because they get to live out. They're not stuck in the home for 24/7. That started the care industry going. So now you can actually have care at home, part-time or full-time. And they are trained caregivers, even though the training is quite variable. We have got daycare facilities coming up, but those are few and far between, and only in areas where there is a critical mass. But the kind of residential care type of system has already been in existence for many, many, many years, and that's the one that people always only think about.
Right. Yes. Yeah. The old folks' home. That's the conventional idea that
that's
we have. Right.
Right? Yeah.
Before we get into that, I would want to explore more about the kinds of services and the standards of care provided in the residential homes. We do have a caller on the line. Good afternoon, Nurul. You have a question?
Hello. Hello, doctor.
Yes.
I'd like to ask, because you were just talking about it just now, I'd like to ask what other services are available. Like, if my mom refuses to go to an old folks home, what other types of services are available?
Right. Thank you very much, Nurul.
All right. No problem.
Okay. Yeah, I feel for you. Yeah, we always have that issue adult children feels the need to put their older person in a nursing home. Actually, the decision to go to a care home should always be made by the patient or the older person, him or herself. It should never be made, they refuse to go, that kind of thing. It should have come from them to start with. And thankfully, it used to be quite difficult because there's no other provisions. But actually putting someone in a care home is actually quite expensive. And there are options such as part-time care. So there are agencies now. But what we're trying to get introduced into the system is this thing called care management.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are companies now which will actually go and assess your care needs, and then they will recommend actually a package. What people are not willing to do is to pay for the service. It's like buying insurance. You have to pay the insurance agent. But you can't actually insure yourself without an agent. And what we're trying, that's what we want to do, to introduce gatekeepers. Because actually, commissioning care yourself can be ridiculously expensive, because the provider will always want you to buy more than you need. If you don't need a nursing home, don't buy a nursing home.
Right.
You might be able to get away with a part-time caregiver or just someone to help you around the house. So you are the one who actually has free time to actually provide the care. So they actually try and maybe the older person could do with rehabilitation rather than care, because if once they've rehabilitated, then they no longer need care. So what we are trying, and the care manager should never be the one who benefits from the care provision.
Right.
It should be an independent person.
They're just a facilitator in that sense.
That's right.
Sort of hooking you up with the right services.
That's right. And it's more cost effective in the long run, because you have an agency who then knows about you, who's then able to decide how much care you need, so you don't end up commissioning more care than you actually need. And then when you need to step up care, you have someone who already knows you, who's able to source care for you, and then they review the need and then they can cut it down. Whereas if you automatically go to a care home, there's very little incentive for the care home to say, I want to make you better, because that means that they lose a client. So they would actually do as much as they can to actually keep you.
I mean, the idea, as you said before, before this, the idea of residential care, and, and that's what we have in our minds when we talk about aged care. And I think we tend to think of the worst examples, what we see in the newspapers of old folks' home, quote unquote, you know, of elderly people just sitting in their chairs, sort of languishing, you know. In terms of the whole spectrum of residential care that's available in Malaysia, what actually are the services that are available?
Yeah, okay. So the residential care and nursing care are considered something separate. So residential care, basically, they only need social care provisions. So they maybe need just someone to cook for them, to clean for them, and the rest of the activities of daily living, they're independent. In a nursing home, they might have continence issues, they might need help with feeding and washing and dressing, those kind of things. So and the the providers are very different. Generally, the people who need old folks homes tend often are provided by the NGOs, and also we have a small amount of government provided old folks facilities, which are which very few people get in because the waiting list is very long and there are very few places. So most of that is actually provided by NGOs, and they tend to be older people whose children really can't keep them anymore, so they have to go to these care facilities. So we need to even re-examine that model, whether we really need these older people to go to old folks homes, because actually they can still contribute towards society.
Right.
And then the next group are the nursing home ones who actually need looking after, and the adult child or the family maybe have to work, so therefore they can't be there to provide the care. And
they
therefore
need almost like 24 round the clock kind of care.
Yeah. Yep. But a lot of times they don't get assessed into suitability.
Right.
So for the care home, the lighter the care, the better, because that means that they don't need to hire so many people. So a lot of times patients are inappropriately placed in these nursing care homes. But whatever the case, that because it's paid out of pocket, our market's very price sensitive, so they have to cost it very low, as low as they can, even though we feel it's expensive. That means they don't get to hire the best caregivers.
Yes.
Yeah, and they always, nearly always dependent on foreign labour.
Right.
And who are turnover is very fast, so variable levels of training, even as I know the operators, we've got to know the operators over the number of years, and you know they always start off with very, very good intentions, and a lot of them keep going because of their residents. It's not because they're heartless and they're just after your money. It's really hard to make ends meet in this kind of situation. So I really feel for the operators when they get so much flack of providing poor quality care. They're nearly always doing the best they can, and it's just that they can't charge anymore because you can't pay anymore. Yeah, if you want better care, you have to be able to pay for it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we are seeing, or at least to my untrained eye, a growth of the private types of, you know, residential homes and nursing care facilities. Are those sort of like on the other end of this cost spectrum?
I think it's a growth across the board, and the growth is happening because of the need, because our population are aging, and more because of the lack of foreign domestic workers. Now people have no choice but to actually use care homes. They think no choice. So we would really like to be able to introduce the idea of care management, where people actually have a care needs assessment, and so it's not the children's decision to put that older person into nursing home, because I think that is very, very heart-wrenching to actually have to think.
Everyone involved.
So, but the care needs gets assessed, and there's a package, there's a recommendation about what you need, and ultimately the care home, there is a place for a care home, but it becomes something that is that the older person actively decides to go to, or if really the older person's not that keen, it becomes something that off the last resort, really, you know, you have to tell them, really, I've explored all the other options, we've got no choice but to give you this. Because actually there are more economical options than putting the older person in a care home.
But these agencies, that these you know, who do the care management and the assessment of needs, do we have them available in Malaysia now?
Yes, the companies find it very difficult to make ends meet because they can't charge a lot.
And people, we don't want to pay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So they're only fledgling services. And even if they try, then the end user ends up telling them what they want anyway.
Right.
Yeah, so they just got to give them what they want.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, you know, going to, of course, the standards of care, I mean, you have mentioned, of course, that these places most of the time have good intentions and are trying to do their best, just with very limited resources.
Yes.
But, you know, for users, you know, what we want to know also is who's overseeing these centres, who regulates them?
Yeah, that's a very sore point. We have had huge issues with regulation for many, many years, simply because most of them are not registered. If you ask us how many are there out there, nobody knows because they're not registered. And we've got to the point where registration has been perceived as difficult. These people have the best intentions. They're already overstretched. They have to keep the costs down. But actually getting registered is beyond their financial means. Then we have two forms of registration. One's the Care Centre Act, where people... it's the same act as you would register a childcare facility or a disabled facility. They are not purpose made for older people. And then really, if you're looking at nursing care facilities, they don't fit under the Care Centre Act.
Right.
So then you're a nursing care facility, you have to register under the Private Health Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is very, very rigorous and very difficult to meet. And if you have to meet all
the
standards...
That's what would cover hospitals.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it'll make it... If you're able to meet that, that means you'll have to charge a lot for care.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there's been a lot of talk about the Elder Care Act, which was supposed to actually register care facilities for older people. It had actually gone to the last reading, but we're not quite sure now what's quite happened to it with, you know, the recent political changes.
Right. Is that the one that was mentioned late last year by the Deputy Prime Minister?
Well, that doesn't seem to be the same one because
right.
she mentioned a new law.
Right. Okay.
Yes. And it's supposed to be an elder law that's supposed to protect older people.
Okay.
And I think they are actually tendering someone to actually write that law. So it's a totally different one.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I found that very interesting. So, you know, what we found was that the Deputy Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Azizah, had announced that the government wants to legislate an act that safeguards the rights and the welfare of the elderly.
Yes.
So what do you envision legislation like that to cover?
Yeah, there's actually already quite a few internationally. So usually, I mean, what Singapore did was just copy the UK one. Mm. Sorry, Singapore. But they just took it and then just adapted it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could do the same. But the problem is that it's not so easy to change acts of parliament. So we should really, and we've actually had a head start in terms of some of the work that we've done in the University of Malaya, and also the other universities have contributed to knowledge as to what our elder law should look like. Because we have to also consider that we're culturally different.
Mm.
Yeah, but by and large is to actually protect the autonomy of the older person, to ensure that nobody is discriminated against because of age.
Mm.
Yeah, if anything, you know, this... Even a retirement age is discriminatory. You know, how can you decide that you have to stop working based on your age alone?
Mm.
So that needs to be revised. We also need to consider employers who actually decide not to hire someone because of their age. That might be an issue.
Mm.
And also what happens, you know, when you talk about banking, currently we have no banking provisions for the older person when they stop being able to go to the bank.
Mm.
How do they get someone to actually withdraw the money for them? You know, how do we safeguard it? If they didn't make the decision, who's going to be their decision maker before they lose mental capacity? How do we protect them?
Right. Okay.
Yeah, financially. And also decision making at the end of life. At the moment, who makes the decision?
Mm.
We actually go to the Mental Health Act for this. And it's really not fit for purpose because the Mental Health Act specifically look at people with mental illness.
Mm.
We don't, it's not catering towards the older person's needs.
Who is likely to still be able to make decisions for themselves.
They should They should enforce the ability to make decisions for themselves. But when they lose the capacity to make decisions, there need to be provisions for them to continue to exercise their autonomy.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned Singapore, and Singapore does legislate, I think, where they sort of enforce that families or adult children have to take care of their older parents.
Yes.
What do you think are the pitfalls of something like that?
Well, I don't know that you really want to waste money on something like this. Because actually when we, in the published literature, when someone actually looked at how often that law is used, very few parents are actually going to take their children to court to ask for maintenance money. Yeah, it's so you're actually going to waste money writing on a law that's going to actually have very, very little impact on care. But also it gives a wrong perception to society again. Because for the longest time, we've always said, looking after your parents is your responsibility,
yes,
dear.
Yes.
And then, you know, when the parent has, and when the older person, children don't come and see them, you see the neighbor goes, what to do, you know, their children don't look after them. And you're like, but you can do it. And they'll be like, oh, but it's not my job, it's their children's job. So if society can change their mindset into thinking that we're actually a global village looking after the older people, looking after the older people is actually everybody's responsibility, including the older person's responsibility.
Themselves,
yes. Yeah. So they have to look after themselves.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and if we can actually change that kind of societal judgmental mindset, that's actually a good start. And then we can actually solve a lot of the care burden issues. We can solve a lot of the mental health issues when we come to the sandwich generation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're talking about aged care facilities today with consultant geriatrician Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin. If you have any questions, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp them over at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. After the market update, I'd just like to look a little bit at the Private Aged Healthcare Facilities and Services Act that was passed last year, just looking at what this is going to cover and you know, how much of a difference this is going to make in terms of improving aged care in Malaysia. You're listening to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living on with me, T. Shao Ik. We have consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin in the studio with us. We've been talking about aged care and trying to focus specifically on sort of the system of care that's available in Malaysia, the kinds of facilities and services that the population is able to access. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the Elder Care Act that was supposed to be passed in Parliament last year.
Yes.
And, you know, we're sort of keeping tabs on what's happening there. And of course, when we talk about the aging population and the care of this population as well, we're talking about involving a lot of stakeholders. Mm. It's not just healthcare, it's social welfare. You know, it's housing, even an urban population, I would imagine. How much of consultation has there been with regard to, you know, how the Elder Care Act has been drafted?
Yeah, there was quite a lot of, initially for the Elder Care Act, it was quite amicable because it took a long time to actually come to a conclusion. And in the end, I mean, we wished it was more prescriptive, but the whole impetus was to actually just register these care homes. And a lot of the policies was actually going to be decided by the Director of Health. That left a lot of wiggle room, but it was something that was decided with all the stakeholders, the care home operators, as well as the the stakeholders in terms of the NGOs, as well as the Ministry of Health doctors, the social care people, who actually has been talking to each other for quite some time.
Mm.
But we know that there's been a change of leadership, and some of that momentum has been lost because of it. And in essence, we are finding our feet again because we are not getting the platform anymore.
Right.
Who do we talk to now? Because it was quite clear last time who we would actually report to from the Ministry of Welfare. And it's got a very long name.
Community Development, yes.
Yeah, that's right. Women, yeah. But we also know, we also have an inroad with the Ministry of Health, and this act was going to actually be administered by the director of health, which came as a surprise. But that's fine, as long as somebody's got a list of care homes. That was the all we wanted. But that's not the flavour that we're getting. And we're getting a lot of undercurrent about, you know, people dissatisfaction about standards, quality of care homes, you know, people wanting to really inspect what's going on in these care homes to actually get things right. You can't do it overnight. You know, it's been a mistake that these places have actually mushroomed to this extent, and we actually were punitive again, then they would go back underground. Right. You know, we don't want to do that. And in fact, we're actually calling for someone to actually get these people registered as soon as possible. Don't ask questions. Just get their names, just get their details, and then we will work with them to actually improve standards. If we can not only do that, I think that will really help our older communities. But with regards to the Elder Care Act regulations, we hope that the Ministry of Health is still on board, on the ball, and they're going to come up with the specific policies. But again, please be permissive so that whoever is out there not registered is able to actually get registered as soon as possible.
Right, because you know, if you, like you mentioned, if the law is punitive, it's just going to be prohibitive.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, after registration, and you say that you know, it's the next step will be to work with the centres.
Yes.
And look at what needs to be improved and all that. Again, who are the stakeholders? You know, going forward, are we siloed right now in the way we approach the issue?
It is totally siloed. So at the moment, we're in between the Ministry of Welfare and the Ministry of Health. So and the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development. Yep. They actually currently register these homes because it's under the Care Centre Act, because the Elder Care Act hasn't quite come to light.
Yep.
Yeah. So hasn't quite been enforced. But one day it'll all shift towards theirs, because it's supposed to, initially when we conceived the act, when the act was conceived, it was supposed to be a grandfather clause and that everybody would just shift over. So and then we will do away with the need for actually using the Private Healthcare Facility Act. So we're not quite sure what's happening to that space. So at the moment, everything is falling in between. You can just imagine, you know, you change government and then something falls in between those two ministries.
Cracks. Yes. Yeah. A huge crack.
Yeah. And so we are screaming, but it's really hard to know who's going to listen, because nobody understands whose space it is going to be. And we really actually need some political voice for the older people.
Okay. I want to just touch on a point that perhaps at this stage that we're at, it could be a dream that we can look forward to.
Yes.
The United Nations, you know, is talking about things like age-friendly cities. And it has been mentioned that, you know, we want to collaborate with the UNDP to develop this age-friendly city. I mean, where are we even at in terms of our spaces being aging-friendly?
I think there are some good examples, pockets of good examples. I mean, bits of Malacca, I'm like walking around going, oh, this could do.
Right.
And, you know, and some places have some shopping malls have actually, you know, made it more easy to get around and things like that. So I think we need to be able to have agencies working together. So there needs to be regulations in terms of when builders are building, that, you know, they need to actually leave this much space in the toilet, you know, have doorways at this minimum, this wide, so that they can actually age in place. People can actually age in place.
Yes.
And it's almost as simple as that. You can change it overnight, but provided the builders are not going to scream at you.
Yes.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're also stakeholders and you can't drive them all out of business. Mm-hmm. But I think it can be done. And builders should know that if you badge yourself like so, because, you know, nowadays there's a freeze in all these high-end properties and everyone's being encouraged to actually build age-assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make yourself that, if you badge yourself that way, then you're also more likely to get your buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it can be a win-win to all. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what would be your advice for people who are currently, you know, living with their with older people at home?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked so much about, you know, the kinds of care and services that should be made available. So for somebody who has an older family member with them, what kinds of conversations should they be having now? What do they need to consider?
Yeah, I think a lot of these, Chinese families and Asian families, there's a lot of unsaid things, isn't it? Mm. Everybody's unwilling to talk about things, and tempers flare, and, you know, family relations. But we really need to calm down a bit, you know, and be take on a more forthright approach, you know, like be more American, you know, just speak your mind, or Australian, and speak your mind and be less restrained in trying to avoid upset. We need to talk about, you know, what the expectations are, talk about finances side of things, you know, what are the expectations, and so that the adult children don't feel burdened. Mm-hmm. So and the older person should be willing to actually continue to contribute towards that family instead of being kind of imposing, saying, you know, I looked after you when you were young, it's your job to look after me. Be a bit more considerate, because if you do that, then you're actually disadvantaging your future generation, because there are other families where their grandparents still continue to provide for their for their children, and you know, while you're still able to work, keep working. Retirement is overrated. Retirement is definitely overrated.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tan. It was mm-hmm. Professor Dr. Tan Mopin, consultant geriatrician, talking about aged care in Malaysia. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.